This is now Tuesday, November 29, is that correct? And this is the last, I guess, official lecture, although I will see if we can arrange something on Thursday. That would be very, very handy for the final. But we're on chapter 20, looking at overhead number 10. And overhead number 10 is dealing with beta oxidation of fatty acids. Yay. And so, if we note here something, what kind of units do we cleave off here? These are how many carbons in those acetyl-CoA? How many carbons are there? That's pretty obvious. How many? Two carbons. So this fatty acids, all fatty acids get cleaned off in two carbon units. And that's fine if you have a 12 and a 16 and a 14 and an 18, that kind of thing. But what happens if you eat plants, which all of us do one time or another, and run across a minor percentage, but nevertheless significant amount of, measurable amount of odd chain fatty acids? What that means is you cut off, if you start out with a 13, you cut off this, what, 10 times? You have five rounds, maybe six rounds of this oxidation. And the very last thing you end up with is not a two-carbon chain, but has how many carbons in it? If it was an odd chain fatty acid, how many carbons would it have in it the last round of oxidation? Three. Yeah. Just, this is painfully obvious, three. And so what do you do with that three? What do you do with that three? That's the next question we're going to answer here. Also, with what do we do with odd chain, with unsaturated fatty acids? Notice, if you recall, looking at those others, that was all saturated. What do you do with unsaturated? All right, let's take a look at A here, and that's odd chain fatty acids. The final round of, if that says alpha oxidation, why do I have alpha oxidation? Why do I have alpha oxidation? I don't know. It's not alpha oxidation. It's beta oxidation. Whoops. At any rate. Beta. Oxidation yields propionyl-CoA. So you need to change that. That makes no sense. I've never seen alpha oxidation. Okay. So yields a propionyl-CoA. Propionyl-CoA. A three-carbon unit. And so what do we do with that? Well, it turns out that propionyl-CoA enters the pathway on the right. This thing right here. So this is the last part of an odd chain fatty acid oxidation. First reaction consumes ATP and carbon dioxide. So it actually uses biotin. Again, here's biotin, prosthetic group, to get the carbon dioxide onto the substrate to make S, notice the stereochemistry there, S-methylmalonyl-CoA. Now, notice, if you would, this resembles the pyruvate carboxylase reaction. In other words, that here you have a three-carbon unit that you're adding a carbon dioxide to. Now, the pyruvate carboxylase reaction, if you remember, takes a three-carbon unit, known as pyruvate, and adds a carbon dioxide to it to make what material? What's the product of the pyruvate carboxylase reaction? Someone like to be brave. What is it? That's oxaloacetate. Yay! Exactly right. Oxaloacetate. Very good. And so you go from a three-carbon unit to four-carbon unit. Here you have that propionyl-CoA. It goes from a three-carbon unit to a four-carbon unit called S-methylmalonyl-CoA. All right? Then S-methylmalonyl-CoA goes into R-methylmalonyl-CoA, which then gets rearranged to make succinyl-CoA. Really? Yes, exactly. So that's an odd way. I mean, the body does this. I mean, it really feels odd. I don't know why it does this. So you have this propionyl CoA, you get this S-methylmalonyl CoA, and then it changes it to an R here. And the third reaction here, it changes that R-methylmalonyl CoA to a succinyl CoA. It's called, use an enzyme called methylmalonyl CoA mutase. You might want to circle that thing. Circle it and remember it, because it is unique in the human biochemistry. And you see that right here. Notice, uses that 5' deoxyadenosyl cobalamin as a prosthetic group. Well, as soon as you see the word cobalamin, you need to know the vitamin is what? Cobalamin is vitamin B. It catalyzes a carbon skeleton rearrangement. Notice you have a branched group here, and that mutase makes it linear. 4 carbons in a row, as opposed, that's a tertiary carbon, and then that becomes a secondary carbon. That's a primary carbon, that becomes a secondary carbon. And you now have that succinyl CoA. And so this one catalyzes, second of only two, vitamin B12 acquiring reactions known. The other involves folate metabolism, homocysteine to methionine. And I really would like to review that folate metabolism for you on Thursday if we don't get to it today. But then I don't think we will. But nevertheless. So here you have this branched carbon skeleton, makes it linear. And that mutase uses vitamin B12. And I love this diagram. I mean, look at vitamin B12. There's vitamin B12. It has got this heme-like material, heme-like group, that has not a magnesium at its center, not an iron, but it's got a cobalt right there. Cobalt. Cobalt? Yes. This is the only cobalt carbon right there. Cobalt carbon. I think somewhere there's a cobalt carbon. Cobalt carbon structure in all of nature is vitamin B12, the only bond they've discovered that bonds, in biochemistry at least, cobalt carbon is in this vitamin B12. You look at this vitamin B12 and you have to ask your question, what biochemical pathway can you think of that evolution would make this thing? I mean, how in the world can you imagine a biochemical pathway being formed for the formation of this complex vitamin, among the most complex vitamins that are known? I don't know. Seems pretty impossible to me, but then again, I'm just a biochemist. All right, so now, succinyl CoA. Oh, I wonder where succinyl CoA comes in. Succinyl CoA, I wonder what pathway that might be. Where do you find succinyl CoA? In the citric acid cycle. All right. Whoops, that's not what I wanted. Let's go back. The citric acid cycle was what chapter? Wasn't 19. Was it 18? Let's find out. No, it wasn't 18. Thank you. 17. Let's go to 17. And let's take a look at something. Let's connect the dots, shall we? It is so fun to connect the dots. Doink, 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 doink. Ah, right there. Let's see if I can get this bigger. Let's play it so it becomes full screen. Oh, look at this. Odd chain fatty acids enter as succinyl CoA. Look at this. Then what happens to succinyl CoA? It gets made into succinate, fumarate, malate, and then from malate or oxaloacetate, you can go on to make what? Glucose. Because from succinyl onward, there's no loss of carbon dioxide at all. You mean to tell me that the last structure of an odd chain fatty acid I can make into a glucose? Yes. Yes, you can, ladies and gentlemen. You can take this succinyl CoA, which you get from that propionyl-CoA, and you can make glucose out of it. Yahoo! So that's the only time you can. All right, let's go ahead, shall we? And now, unsaturated fatty acids. How many of us love to eat unsaturated fatty acids? Raise your hand. We love those so-called healthier unsaturated fatty acids. You can still become unhealthy eating too many unsaturated fatty acids. It's all about calories. All right, certain unsaturated fatty acids have double bonds in the incorrect position to act as substrates in the beta oxidation pathway. I want you to note here is a very common fatty acid, linolenic acid, very common. We go through three rounds of beta oxidation. Notice what happens here. We get to this round, and there's a double bond at beta gamma. What's the problem with having the double bond at beta gamma? What's the problem there? Is there a problem there? There must be. Somebody invented an enzyme to overcome it. Okay. If you wanted an unsaturated fatty acid to enter the beta oxidation pathway, that double bond needs to be on what two carbons? Alpha and beta. Alpha and beta. But is, in linolenic acid, is it on alpha and beta? No, it's where? Beta gamma. And that gets hung up. Ouch! There's nothing else we can do in beta oxidation. So the body's come up with another enzyme called enol-CoA isomerase, and guess what it does? It changes that beta gamma into a what? Alpha beta! Yay! And then it keeps going and eventually gets a situation where you now have a situation. It keeps going, and then you end up having a double bond that's on the alpha beta where it needs to be, but unfortunately, it gets conjugated with a, if that's alpha beta, that's a gamma delta. Gamma delta? Delta to gamma? Whatever. Another one. So that conjugation halts. That conjugation halts the beta oxidation. So what we have to do here is we have to then take NADPH and reduce one of the two double bonds to and that becomes again a beta gamma, and then the isomerase moves that back into the correct position, and we continue the beta oxidation. Really kind of cool. Very cool how these mechanisms work, how you can shift these electrons around. You, you reduce one of the two double bonds, it centers, then it shifts it, and it goes down to here and goes on. I want you to know a little bit, if you wonder why bacteria are eventually going to rule the earth, you can see that right here. Because in mammalian systems, this process of taking this, getting rid of this conjugation and shifting the double bond requires two enzymes, a reductase and isomerase. Where if you're in E. coli, there's a single enzyme called 2,4-dienoyl-CoA reductase that does it in a single step. So what's smarter, taking two enzymes to do it or taking one enzyme to do it? E1. So if you ever wonder why the bacteria, like I said, are going to rule the earth, if they don't already, it's because they are smarter than we are. All right. Any questions about that particular method? Any questions? Kind of cool? Yes, it is. It's very, very cool. All right. Fate of succinate from odd-chain fatty acid remnants. Now, this is some more detail here. The succinate, this is on overhead number 14, succinate enters the citric acid cycle indirectly. Metabolic intermediate, of course, of TCA catalytic amounts, add succinate directly to the cycle, would not allow it to be oxidized. excess succinate enters TCA through pyruvate, it's made into malate, leaves TCA. The enzyme malic enzyme to produce pyruvate used in Calvin 4 cycle. Notice the use of NADPH. So malate, that 4-carbon unit, then comes out and is released as carbon dioxide, and that pyruvate enters into the gluconeogenesis pathway again to be made into carbohydrate. So these carbons originally came from the 3-carbon fragment of fatty acid. So, now, what in the world are you talking about here, Dr. Novak? Well, let's go back to days of yore, and what was it? Was it 17, right, that had the citric acid cycle? And what in the world were you talking about? Well, here it is again. Let's relate this. Okay, so succinyl-CoA comes in from fatty acid oxidation using the vitamin B12, succinate, fumarate, and goes to malate. And notice in this diagram it goes on to glucose. Now, I've not mentioned how it goes on to glucose, but here's how it goes on to glucose. Right here. That malate that's coming off from citric acid gets acted upon, gets oxidized, as you can see here, that alcohol becomes oxidized. It loses the carbon dioxide and gets made into pyruvate. Because if you recall, gluconeogenesis did not have a 4-carbon intermediate anywhere in it. It only had 6 carbons and 3 carbons. So this malate, which we got from the succinate, which we got from the 3-carbon fragment from that fatty acid, that malate's too big to make glucose. So it gets broken down, gets lost, and one of the carbons gets lost as carbon dioxide. That pyruvate, as you know, can then be used to go on and make glucose. But Dr. Novak, that's a lot of carbon dioxide being added and a lot of carbon dioxide being lost and blah, blah, blah. You're right. But it's that odd chain fatty acids. It gets to be a complicated thing, and the body handles it in unexpected ways. And so there are reasons that are beyond our understanding as to why the body does what it does. All right, so, and this is why drugs that you'll be given always have side effects that are completely unexpected. They just are. Even some of the most heavily tested, drugs over the long term end up having trouble. All right, now what happens if you have some very long chain fatty acids, which does happen? These are oxidized in the peroxisome. They're originally attacked by an enzyme called catalase, and they're broken down almost in a very rapid way with intentional loss of energy. They don't really capture all the energy that they could. Ketone bodies, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you need to be aware of these ketone bodies for the final ketone bodies. Ketone bodies. And ketone bodies play an important role in diabetes. So write this down. Okay, in the liver, a major portion of acetyl-CoA produced by fatty acid oxidation and or from glycolysis enters the metabolic pathway that produces soluble forms of fat. These are soluble forms of fat. These are called ketone bodies, an important source of energy equivalent in the blood for muscle and during the brain for starvation. So for those of you who have not eaten breakfast or did not eat, you know, haven't eaten since breakfast yesterday, you do not have any more carbohydrate stores in your body, I guarantee you that, if you haven't eaten for 24 hours. And there is a tilt in the metabolism of your liver where it's starting to shift, and it's detectable, but it's not prominent, shift away from the production of carbohydrate into the direct breakdown of fatty acids into making these 3 types of ketone bodies. acetoacetate, acetone, and beta-hydroxybutyrate. You need to remember those three carbon compounds as ketone bodies. Acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate are actually intentionally formed. Acetone is an unintentional byproduct of it. So, the first step I'm going to show you is the interrelationship between acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate. So acetoacetate, as you can see, has the acetic acid and it's got a ketone body here. That is reduced by NAD plus under the influence of this dehydrogenase to make this D-beta-hydroxybutyrate. So there's an interrelationship between acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate. Of the two, of course, beta-hydroxybutyrate is slightly more water-soluble. But the fundamental form of a ketone body is acetoacetate. And you can see that on this next page in terms of how it's formed. Production of acetoacetate. Let's see here. I blew it up so it's easier to see. Okay, so here's how you make acetoacetate, which is in fact the fundamental ketone body. You take two acetyl-CoAs under the enzyme called thiolase, and you make acetyl-CoA. Then you have another carbon, two carbons come in under the influence of hydroxymethylgluteral-CoA synthase, HMG-CoA synthase. And that makes this six-carbon unit called HMG-CoA. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six carbons right there. And then there is this this HMG-CoA lyase, and that breaks this down into a four-carbon unit and a two-carbon unit. And four-carbon unit, of course, acetoacetate is that primary ketone body. This acetyl-CoA then reverts back and starts the whole process again. But Dr. Novak, that seems like such a complicated thing for just making it a four-carbon unit. Yes, it is, except for the fact of this particular material right here, HMG-CoA. HMG-CoA. And I'd like for you to note next to it, that is the building block for cholesterol. HMG-CoA is the building block for cholesterol synthesis. It's where cholesterol synthesis starts. Cholesterol synthesis starts. And this enzyme called HMG-CoA synthase, is a target for one of the more potent cholesterol-inhibiting drugs that are available on the market today, is targeting this enzyme, HMG-CoA synthase. Unfortunately, my mind being what it is, I can't remember off the top of my head what drug it is, but it does act on HMG-CoA synthase. So the ketone body production has an important role to play for cholesterol biosynthesis, which is another reason why we talk about ketone bodies. All right, so here you have this acetoacetate. So we've now made acetoacetate. If we go back to the previous page, we can make beta-hydroxybutyrate. Is that correct? How do we get acetone out of it if that's the third of the three ketone bodies? Well, when acetoacetate is being produced in excess, such as during uncontrolled diabetes, acetone is produced by the non-enzymatic decarboxylation of acetoacetate, and that is this acetoacetate simply spontaneously breaks apart because of its high concentration and makes acetone and carbon dioxide. How many of you have ever smelled acetone? Excellent. Does it have a distinctive smell to it? Most people who are not familiar with acetone, when they smell acetone, they smell kind of a sweet smell. And one of these days, whether you go to medical school or dental school or whatever, you may run across, although it's less usual nowadays because it's typically pretty well controlled, diabetes, you may find somebody comatose and you run up to them, and they're breathing shallowly, and you listen for their heartbeat, and you check for their breath, and then you notice some kind of a sweet smell in their breath. And as soon as you smell that sweet smell, well, most people will smell, they smell kind of sweet. You'll recognize it as, no, that's not sweet, that's acetone. That's acetone. That people can have such badly controlled diabetes that there is so much acetoacetate in their blood that it spontaneously breaks down to form acetone, and there's so much acetone in it that you can smell it coming out of their lungs. They're very sick. If you can smell acetone on their lung, on their breath, they're very sick. If they're not comatose, they're going to feel like crap. Okay, they're just going to feel horrible. And as soon as you know that, you're going to start trying to put insulin in them as fast as they possibly can, because this uncontrolled diabetes means that the body has no insulin. Has no insulin. And that's telling all the tissues that we need to put more energy into the blood. And so the liver and adipose tissue are dumping energy units into the blood. So there's just a tremendous amount of sugar in the blood, a tremendous amount of fatty acid equivalents, which would be ketone bodies in the blood. And that's where you get this acetone smell. So what is the fate of these things? Well, either beta-hydroxy, so the conversion of ketone bodies back into acetyl-CoA, this occurs in the brain, and this occurs in the muscle under normal circumstances, occurs in the brain under starvation. The beta-hydroxybutyrate is converted back into acetoacetate. Succinyl-CoA comes in and transfers a CoA onto it, and you get this acetyl-CoA. Thiolase comes in, the same thiolase that's used for beta-oxidation of fats, and breaks that into two acetyl-CoAs, and you're back and running down the citric acid cycle, assuming you have oxygen in your body. If you don't have oxygen in your body, the whole question is pretty much moot. Okay, let's go ahead. What are some of the compare and contrasts fatty acid biosynthesis? Let's compare and contrast what happens in these two things. You can see here the beta oxidation occurs where? And the group is CoA. There's the FAD as an electron acceptor. There's an intermediate called L-beta-hydroxyacyl-CoA. Again, NAD is an electron acceptor. And the unit is a 2-carbon unit. But if you take a look at biosynthesis, this occurs where? And the carrier protein is something called acyl group carrier, ACP. Acyl carrier protein is the group carrier that holds the fatty acids as they're being built. What's the electron donor? Notice the P there, indicating we're dealing with what? Synthesis. Thank you very much. You have the D, hydroxylacyl group. NADPH is electron donor. And the 2-carbon donor here is malonyl-CoA. So there are distinctive physical and biochemical differences between biosynthesis and beta oxidation. Makes it regulation much easier. Let's take a look at how we do this. There's physical location, carrier molecule, electron carrier, stereoform, electron carrier, and the product's initial reactants are unique. Acyl-CoA produced in the mitochondria, this is for the synthesis, must be transported out of the mitochondria to participate in fatty acid biosynthesis. Acetyl-CoA is transported out in the form of citric acid. A elaborate transport system is required. Note the production of NADPH. Now, you do not need to know this necessarily, but again, does this begin to make sense? Why is glycolysis slowed when there's high levels of citric acid around? Glycolysis occurs where? The cytosol, all right? And what enzyme am I talking about slowing down when the presence of citrate? What enzyme of glycolysis is affected by citric acid? Enzymes that are most likely to be controlled in glycolysis. hexokinase and PFK1. Do you remember how, did you remember how complicated that was? How many different allosteric effectors there was on PFK1? If I ask you any question about an allosteric modifier for glycolysis and what enzymes being affected, 90% of the time you should say PFK1. That's an excellent guess if you can't remember it. The others is hexokinase, which is feedback inhibited. Okay, well, at any rate, so here's the mitochondria. What are we talking about? We want to make synthesis. So we're making pyruvate. From pyruvate, we make oxaloacetate. Oxaloacetate, we combine this with acetyl-CoA, which we get from fatty acids, to make citrate. Now oxaloacetate and citrate, is that a part of the citric acid cycle? Yes. Pyruvate carboxylase, what is that a part of? It's in the wrong place, but where is it actually a part of? Where do you find pyruvate carboxylase? It was in gluconeogenesis, right? Remember the bottom one in gluconeogenesis? The first one, pyruvate to oxaloacetate? So, at any rate, so you make that oxaloacetate, you make it citrate. Citrate moves into the cytosol where it affects a lot of things, and then it gets broken down. Oxaloacetate gets broken down to malate, and when the citrate moves into oxaloacetate, it releases a what? That particular 2-carbon unit. So now you have that 2-carbon unit in the cytosol where it can be used to begin to build up fatty acids. And so then the rest of it is just recycled. Oxaloacetate, malate, pyruvate, back in, back up and over, all designed to get this 2-carbon unit from the inside of the mitochondria to the outside of the mitochondria. You do not need to memorize this particular diagram. It's okay. But you do need to know that the reason why citrate is out there is because it's trying to carry that 2-carbon unit outside into the cytosol. All right. And now the actual too far. I've got to stop. Bop, 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 bop. And one more. There we go. Turns out that biosynthesis of fatty acids doesn't begin with acetyl-CoA. It actually begins with malonyl-CoA. And how do you make malonyl-CoA? So malonyl-CoA is actually a 3-carbon unit, whereas the acetyl-CoA is a 2-carbon unit. So what happens is there's this enzyme called acetyl-CoA carboxylase. And so this enzyme containing biotin is charged, as it were, with bicarbonate, which loads a carbon dioxide onto the enzyme. Acetyl-CoA comes in and attacks that enzyme carbonate structure and makes a 3-carbon unit called malonyl-CoA. And there you have the enzyme with the free biotin ready to do it again. So again, you find biotin in a wide variety of carbon synthesis reactions. This acetylcarboxylase, that does this entire thing. Essentially, it does this right here. It takes acetyl-CoA and it turns it into malonyl-CoA. It's regulated by phosphorylation. This has an interesting phosphorylation process. If you phosphorylate it, the enzyme is inactivated. Phosphorylation is accomplished by cyclic AMP put a C in front of that. Cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase. What's another name for that cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase? Remember what it was? Protein kinase A. That's correct. Protein kinase A. All right. So, glucagon Thank you very much. Glucagon epinephrine, promote phosphorylation. perhaps by inhibiting dephosphorylation enzyme, stimulates dephosphorylation, which activates the acetyl-CoA carboxylase. If we had more time, we'd take a look at the metabolic logic of this. We'd take a look at the metabolic logic of it.
The carboxylase.
I did? Thank you very much. Carboxylase AMP. Okay. Now I don't even know what's supposed to be in there. Try that again. What? Oh, it wasn't there before at all? Oh, okay. Doing. Oh, it did it? Okay. There we go. Thank you very much. Yikes. This road is more powerful than I thought. And so you here you have a situation where you've got this. Let's take a look. Glucagon and epinephrine promote phosphorylation. Again, if this is phosphorylated, the enzyme is what? Inactivated. Let's think about the logic of this. This malonyl-CoA is a substrate for fatty acid biosynthesis. Is that right? Biosynthesis. And so, in fatty acid biosynthesis, if you are starving, do you want fatty acid biosynthesis to be turned on? If you're under starvation conditions, do you believe fatty acid biosynthesis is appropriate to be turned on? Is it likely to be turned on? No. Okay, so in times of energy need, when the body needs energy, is the liver going to synthesize fatty acids? No, it's going to break them down. Well, what signals does the liver get that you need energy? Well, there's a couple of them. Of course, there's epinephrine, which is the old fight or flight hormone that says, I need immediate energy right now. High levels of epinephrine will inactivate this enzyme. That makes sense. If you need energy, you don't need biosynthesis. Okay? What is glucagon? If you have high levels of glucagon in your blood, what does that say about the energy content of your blood? Is there plenty of energy in your blood or a lack of energy in your blood when there's high levels of glucagon? There's a lack of energy. Again, if there's a lack of energy in your blood, you do not want biosynthesis to be turned on. Therefore, glucagon and epinephrine, through cyclic AMP, inactivate this enzyme and slow down fatty acid biosynthesis. That's the rationale behind that process. Okay. Boom. Okay. Fatty acid biosynthesis. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. I had you memorize the enzymes of this, didn't I? I think so. Let's now review this. We're going to take a look. We're going to produce palmitic acid. Contains seven enzyme activities in a single 534 kilodalton protein chain. What, Dr. Nomak? What did you just say? Did you say that all seven activities are encapsulated in a single linear enzyme chain, protein chain, and it gets folded for the first enzyme, then it gets folded for the second enzyme activity. There's another folding for the third egg, and then another kind of folding for the fourth, another kind of folding for the fifth, and sixth, and seventh. And it's all folded in this one great big conglomerate. Amazing, ladies and gentlemen. Seven different activities on a single primary chain. And that's not all. I feel like a television salesman. And that's not all, ladies and gentlemen. That these are actually two chains are dimerized together. So they're actually, it's a dimer. There are two chains with each of them containing seven activities, those unique seven activities that are physically associated with each other. The active synthetic protein is a dimer of these two protein chains, each containing these seven enzyme activities. The growing fatty acid is anchored by an acyl carrier protein. All right? So, what happens is that, well, I'll tell you a little bit. Let's take a look at the biochemistry of it. Here's acetyl-CoA. Here's malonyl-CoA. How many carbons does acetyl-CoA have that it's going to be used? It has two. And then it gets translated into two more. This, it gets transferred from a CoA to an ACP. Guess what ACP stands for? Acyl carrier protein. Acyl carrier protein. So you have these two units on acyl carrier protein. In comes malonyl-CoA. It gets transferred to a carrier protein, and the malonyl and the acetyl group come together, lose the carbon dioxide to form acetoacetyl ACP. Right? Then what happens? Well, the reverse of oxidation. Here you have acetoacetyl ACP, NADPH comes in, reduces that ketone body to an alcohol. Loses a water, you get a double bond. Another NADPH comes in with its electrons, reduces that double bond to a set of single bonds, and guess what happens? This then goes back and repeats it again with another malonyl-CoA coming in and producing that two-carbon unit on the fresh growing end of the fatty acid chain where it goes through that same process again. So after seven reaction cycles, you have this palmitoyl ACP. You have this esterase that cleaves off the sulfur carbonyl bond. And there you have your palmitic acid. Yay! But you keep adding more and more malonyl-CoA. The malonyl-CoA comes in, and that's the three-carbon unit that attaches, loses the carbon dioxide, and extends the chain by two carbons. So you grow it in two carbons with an original founding unit substrate being three carbons long, and you lose that carbon dioxide. That loss of carbon dioxide right there helps compel the pathway. All right, let's see here. All right. How much time we got? All right. Okay, so overhead number 21, shall we, ladies and gentlemen? That is that overall stoichiometry. We'll leave blank. Letter D, modification fatty acids. Can you make ones longer than 16? Yes, you can make longer ones than 16. They use a different set of enzymes. So the fatty acid synthase can only make things as long as 16. If you need to make longer than that, then they go through this. In the ER, it's successive condensations with malonyl-CoA. And then you have enzymes called desaturases, which then get in there and make these unsaturated double bonds that everybody likes so much. And so there are desaturases that take that saturated fatty acid and make it an unsaturated fatty acid. Now, interestingly enough, this unsaturated these fatty acids, and there are several of them, delta 9, delta 6, delta 5, and delta 4 desaturases, make a variety of double bonds. Turns out that when you look at it and look at the composition of the saturases, desaturases you have in the body, that there is a fatty acid called linoleic acid, that you can be synthesized. That you can't synthesize. So there's actually an essential fatty acid that you have to eat through plants. You can't make it. Right? And it turns out that linoleic acid, precursor to prostaglandins, thus an essential fatty acid. Animals deprived of linoleic acid have poor growth, poor wound healing, and dermatitis. Linoleic acid is an important constituent of epidermal fungal lipids. Function of skin, water permeability barrier. Animals deprived of linoleic acid must drink far more water than those with adequate diet. However, if you're eating anything at all, you're going to get enough linoleic acid for yourself. You're going to find other starvation problems besides linoleic acid if you are starving. So linoleic acid is in everything that you eat. And so if you're eating it all, you're not going to have trouble with it. All right, summary of lipid metabolism, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you just love this? Triglycerols get made into fatty acids, which go into membrane lipids. Beta oxidation makes it into acetyl-CoA, which can go made into cholesterol or ketone bodies. Notice this cholesterol is a one-way thing. And acetyl-CoA can go back into the citric acid cycle. Acetyl-CoA can go back and be made into fatty acids and be made into triglycerols with the production, with the use of ATP and NADPH. Very straightforward. All right, triacylglycerol biosynthesis, we will skip that. And regulation of fatty acid metabolism. Do we have? No, we don't. All right, I guess we're done right here. So what's happening tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen? Test. What time in the morning? 8. That's exactly correct. 8. And I'll be here with it. And I will send around the answers to the handout that I passed out yesterday. I'll try to do that this morning. And it'll be mostly multiple choice, just a page or two of short answer questions. Yes?
Did you tell us which metabolism?
I haven't yet. And I will. I apologize. I have not, but I will. I'll send that out this morning. Okay? What metabolism quizzes will be on this test? Yeah. Yes, this is, today's stuff is not on the test.
And which chapters are we having?
It will be take home, but it will be whatever is left.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll be due sometime next week. Yeah. So it'll be a nice review for the final. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.